So the reason why I took this sugi off many years ago is because if you ever, for those who go to shul, if you ever watch when people get an aliyah, it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing that everybody has their own little shtick, okay? Like one guy gets up there and please don't take this with a negative connotation, but one guy gets up there and takes his like tits strings and puts it like, you know, over that. Another guy puts it over and kisses it. Another guy takes a gartel and kisses it. This guy has it open. This guy has it closed. This guy lifts it. This guy bows. How could it be, right? Such a basic halacha of getting an aliyah. How is it possible to lend itself to all this individual halachic expression? And I'm using the word halachic in a little liberal way here. Meaning, how could that be? It's just so odd because halacha does pride itself on some type of objective formulation, right? I mean, let's say, for example, I'll give you an example, okay? In the tefillah realm. Maybe we'll do that sugi also, but bowing for Shemona Esrei, okay? The Gemara makes it clear. There's one way to bow for Shemona Esrei. You must bow your back down to the point where your vertebrae are kind of popping out. So it's about like that, okay? That's clear, right? People don't do that today. There's no one brings down that you're not, you know, everyone brings down this is the way you're supposed to bow. People don't do it. Whatever, I can give reasons why they don't. But the point is, there's one way to do it. There's one way. There's one way to pick up a lulav, right? There's okay, little enhancements, but when it comes to getting an aliyah, it's just so weird that there are just so many different things that people do. So that's why I know some of the guys in my shiur were mortified. Hold on, like, were mortified that I brought in like achronim and stuff like that because we don't usually do that in Gemara shiur. But what I like about this though is that it really does show, in my opinion, how you go from what I call like the halacha in its purely abstract, idealized form, and then how things over time. Made their way in, and whether or not they're enhancements or detractions of the actual halacha. So my opinion, if you have a good svara for this, you can actually then kind of figure out how it applies, and then you can start working backwards and see why people do certain things, okay? That's what I happen to like about this sugya. So look at the Gemara. This is, by the way, this is an easy Gemara. It's Gemara Megillah. So what does the Gemara say? All right, so obviously there's a certain premise you have to have in mind here to succeed in the sugya, which is that how was leaning done in the old days and versus today? Okay? You want to answer that, Gabi? Yeah.
The person who was called up, he was called up to read.
Good, right? So we call up Yohanan to read. So what do you do, according to Remeir? You open the Sefer Torah. You look. What are you looking for? Okay, notice, is there any mention in the Gemara of anything about touching the, right, no kissing it, no talis, nothing. You look at it, you, golol means you close it, you make the bracha, right? And v'chozer, you go back, open it, and start reading, okay? That's pretty clear, right? Okay, no, again, just note that there's no touching of the, what do you call it, of the, no kiss, nothing like that. Okay, Rav Yehuda Omer, go on. Okay. He says, no. He says, what do? You open it, you see it, you make the bracha and read. Okay. So before we go into the my taima, right, which is what's the reason, let's ask ourselves a question. At this point in the Gemara, without knowing any, pretend you didn't know anything about this, right? You're looking at this for the first time. Who makes more sense and why? Couldn't agree more. It is efficient, right? What do you gain by closing it, right? It would seem like if I'm there, open the Sefer Torah, look at the makom, make the bracha and start reading. Closing it and opening it in. Now, as a side point, let me just my own personal vent. As you know, as a Baal Kore, right, especially, for instance, a few weeks ago by Parshas Miketz, it's terrible when somebody closes the Sefer Torah for the bracha. You know why? Because it's you have to spend time figuring out where the makom is. You know, you show them first and they close it. You don't necessarily remember the makom. To go back and remember why Miketz, because Miketz has no breaks in it. Right, a parsha like that, you can get lost very easily. So it's a little frustrating as a Baal Kore when that happens. Well, let's put that to the side. So the Gemara says, My time,
Rabbi Meir, Pide Ula. Damar Ula, Mipnei Ma Amru Hakore, Torah, Lo Isaye, Le Mi Turkmana, Pide Shalo Yamru, Targum, Pitu Torah.
Okay, so I assume everyone's familiar with the halacha of the Meturgaman, another thing that I cry that we don't have today. I'd rather us switch over to a 3-year laning cycle and then have somebody who's at the bima. I'm sorry for being sound like a heretic for a second, but translating into whatever language the people understand, right? I think it would be much better laning-wise if you were in a shul and someone was explaining the parsha. What? Rather than, I mean, because using Tirgum today would be worse because no one understands Aramaic. But I'm saying the idea of Tirgum, it's sad that we don't have it today. But anyway, so what's the halakha here? So you had, how did it work? You had someone leaning, right? Let's say Yaakov's leaning, and the Meturgamon's right next to you, okay? And you lean a pasuk, and then what does the Meturgamon do? Okay, translate it, okay? All right, so what does it mean, lo yisael Meturgamon? The problem with the Meturgamon is you don't want people to think that inside the Torah is written Aramaic. That would be very bad. So what are you not supposed to do? You don't want to lead on the Meturgamon. Okay? Because what are people going to say? Let's pretend it's a small shul. If people see, right, if people actually observe the Meturgamon as if he's, let's say, reading from the Torah, what are they going to think? They're going to think that, oh, what's in the Torah? In the Torah, there's Aramaic. Of course. Oh, okay, let's be careful, okay? That's a semi-good question, okay? Question is, yeah, why would we care? Okay, but let's assume, it's a good question. I want to be very careful. We're not ready to answer that yet. Want to make sure that you understand this is not a philosophical question, okay? It's a good philosophical question in general. It's not pertinent to the sugya, okay? But we still have to define that issue, okay? But anyway, the Gemara now says, just like over there, what don't we want to do? We don't want people to think that Tirgum's written in the Torah. Hachanami, that's your cue, k'day.
Hachanami k'day, shalo yamru.
So that's phenomenal. That makes a lot of sense, right? Meaning, when a guy gets an aliyah, okay, if a guy kept the Sefer Torah open while making the brachos, now let's put aside the fact that today, remember, don't think about what we do today, okay? There's no sidurim though, okay? I know today you might say, well, I'm not going to look in the Torah, I look in the Siddur. Forget that. Forget what we do today. We're going back to the creation of this halacha, okay? So what are you going to say? What you're going to say is Rebbe Meir makes a lot of sense now. Because, again, taking it axiomatically, we don't want people to say that when you open up a Sefer Torah and you're reading from it, you're reading the brachos, right? And that's what people will think. People will think that if I have the Sefer Torah open, what are they going to think when it's open and I'm making the brachos? The brachos are written in the Torah. That'd be bad, because the brachos aren't written in the Torah. Okay? So now it sounds like Rameyer has got a very good svara. Well, I shouldn't say svara. He has a strong position, right? He has Ula, and this fits into Ula. Is that clear? In other words, he's saying there's a comparison between the case of the Meturgamon leading him on, and this case of if I make the brachos of the sefer of leaning Birchas Torah with the sefer Torah open, people will make the same mistake. That seems like a very compelling argument. So what is now? Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda.
Rabbi Yehuda argum ika le mitai brachos ika le mitai,
which Rashi explains like this. Okay. And this is where, if you like analytical Gemara, you'd want to throw your Gemara against the wall. Because Gemara's answer is so silly. The Gemara is saying, again, let's get the mechanics down. Rabbi Yehuda is acknowledging, he agrees with Ulul Talacha, he agrees that we don't want people thinking that X is written in the Torah when it's not actually in the Torah. Is that clear? We don't want that, right? Rabbi Yehuda agrees with that. He just says that when it comes to Berachas HaTorah and Kriyas HaTorah, people aren't going to make that mistake. Now, why is that so problematic? Thank you. If you learn this machlokas literally, why is it so problematic? What's so problematic about it?
Seems like a very arbitrary line that we find.
Okay. Okay, Shmuel. Let's keep going with that. How can you solve this machlokas? Now, I don't mean analytically, I'm saying practically. What would be the solution to this kind of debate?
Go ask every Amma Oretz what they
exactly! Just go around the Bavel, go to the local shuls and say, listen, if a guy made the brachos with the sefer to open, what would you think? I'm just saying, like, no, Yosef, let me finish. What's the benefit in recording such a machlokas, right? What's the benefit if the solution is such an easy solution?
But
then it gets even funnier, because then what's the resolution halakhically to this? It's like a funny thing, because, like, there's what Rabbi Yehuda is going to say for people in his community, X, and Ramirez is going to say for his community, Y. I mean, it's just very weird. Like, to me, this is pleading for some type of svara. Some type of explanation to what the basis of the machlokas is. Not simply what we would say in mitzias. It's not simply, well, they're arguing about what people would think. I mean, what kind of machlokas is that? But doesn't Rashi say openly, Aval brachas akol yodin shein brachas ksuvim b'Torah? If you're just saying, everyone knows brachas are written in the Torah. And the Gemara ends off by saying, the halacha is, we pasuk like Rebbe Yehuda, which means that, again, I'm not going to criticize anyone here yet, but I'm saying yet. I'm saying, we, according to Gemara, how do we paskin? When you get an aliyah, this is the psak. The psak. When you get an aliyah, okay, the Torah is supposed to remain open when you make the brachos. That's how we paskin. We'll get to what happened today, why some people don't do it. But I'm saying it's clear from the Gemara, halacha, poseach roa v'rach v'kore. Where's paskining? All right. I want to hear a svara for this. I want to know, how can we approach this area in a way where we can make sense of this machlokas? How we could take it out of the realm of simply something that can be solved by polling, and rather show that there's actually a halachic basis for such an argument. Because I do think there's a halachic basis for it. And I think, and again, not to give anything away, but I think it obviously lies in the fact of whether the case of the Birchas HaTorah is comparable to the case of Ula. Okay? Meaning, is Birchas HaTorah just like the Ula issue by Torgamon or not? And I think the real... Okay, fine. I'll stop there. I think we all have to accept. We have to accept. If we can't accept this, we're going to have a big problem. We have to accept the fact that there's truth to both sides when it comes to this being a concern. Meaning, there's no question that according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's got to be people out there who can come to the erroneous conclusion. And according to Meir, there, what do you call it? He has to agree with Rabbi Yehuda, there's going to be people out there who won't come to the erroneous conclusion. So the fact that there's a chashash either way, right? The fact that such a chashash exists, they're both moda. They both agree to that. Like this. So let's it's good. Let's put this all together, okay? In other words, before we get to Clark's point, okay, that'll be the second point. Let's look at Maturgamon. So I think what Bitzal and someone else was saying is spot on. That it's clear that if I ask you what's the halachic requirement of Kriyas HaTorah, it's an act of reading. That's what you're doing, right? You're supposed to read the Torah. But you see that what did Chazal do? They added things to Kriyas HaTorah. And one thing they added was the Maturgamon, because the Maturgamon changes this from simply reading to... I like public service announcement, but I'll call it limud, all right? In other words, in order to demonstrate that it's limud, it must be a public service announcement. And if it's not in the language that people understand, how could this function as a limud? So the idea of a maturgamon becoming part of Kriyas HaTorah is because since the objective of Kriyas HaTorah is really limud, so in order to ensure that it's a good limud, you have to have a maturgamon. But that means that the maturgamon now is part of the Kriyas HaTorah itself, okay? It's not the Maisa of Kriyas HaTorah, but it's certainly part of the institution. And now, because of that, we have to be concerned about potential distortions emerging. I don't care why it leads to people writing it. The point is, the concern emerges because by expanding the halachic square of Kriyas HaTorah to include the Maturgamon, we have to combat the fact, in trying to achieve Limud, we have to combat the fact that if it's not done in the correct way, it could undermine the very objective it's coming out to do, which is to limud HaTorah. We don't want to undermine that possibility, okay? That's good. That's the first step I would take. But now, if that's true, now to me, the machlokas can become a little clearer, because obviously Rav Meir is going to say what? He's going to say that just like, this is a little hard to think this way, but just like the Maturgamon is part of Kriyas HaTorah, what else is part of Kriyas HaTorah? The brachos, right? Now, think about the consequence of that. Good. In other words, why would the chashash be different? The Maturgamon is, you'll see where it's different in a second, but the Maturgamon is part of Kriyas HaTorah, and the brachos are part of Kriyas HaTorah. So they're both part of the institution of Kriyas HaTorah, the same potential distortion can emerge. That I can answer. They would say, oh, well, again, you're sitting in the audience, and you're not that familiar with Torah. Remember, you're not familiar with Torah. So what are you going to say? There's no difference between... Man, the Sefer Torah is open. The guy on the side, there's no difference between that and the guy opening up and saying brachos. They're going to think whatever seems to be coming from the bima is coming from the Torah. So Rabbi Yehuda has to agree with the idea of the Maturgamon. So what now? I ask you guys, going down this road, what would Rabbi Yehuda now say? How could Rabbi Yehuda say Hakol Yodin Shein Brachos Ksuvim Matara? What does he mean when he says that? How else can you look at the brachos in Berachos Torah? You got to be careful here, because he can't deny, he cannot deny they're part of, that they're not part of what he called the Kriyas HaTorah. He must acknowledge that. So how can he create a split? This is the next step to take. How does he create a split between what's happening with the brachas and the Torah versus the Maturgamon? And it's not just, and don't say, because the Maturgamon is like in the middle. That's not going to work. David, yes. I should have got Giza Cohen. So what Saul's saying is correct. Yonatan, you, right? Yeah. In other words, well, to put it in more Aristotelian terms, right? Function. Right, it's a classic function construct type debate, which is that it's true that the brachas are part of Kriyas HaTorah, But from a functional standpoint, they function much differently than the Meturgamon. The Meturgamon is there to enhance the Lima Datara. But that's not what the brachas are there for. The brachas functionally are there to, as a matir, they're part of it, but they sit at the beginning of it. In other words, they're the haschala. They're in a sense, they're allowing the maisa kriya to emerge. That's a very different function than what do you call it, than the Meturgamon. So now, if you accept that, right, which I do, so now if that's the case, let's go back for a second. It's not, of course, that's why I was saying before, of course there's going to be people going to be confused, right? Rav Yehuda is going to say, well, if people understood what the function of the bracha is, they would never make this mistake, right? Whereas according to a mayor, right, if people saw the brachas in his way, they're going to make this mistake. You understand? In other words, the error emerges based on whatever your svara is. If your svara is Rav Yehuda, then people understand the bracha's function is different than Meturgamon. They're not going to make that error. Now, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying realistically, of course people make a mistake. Not every single person is going to know Rav Yehuda's svara or a mayor's svara, but I'm just saying, it's much more sensible to learn the Gemara in a way where you see that the error emerges from the Svara. Not that there's some sort of factual issue about who makes mistakes and who doesn't. If you hold the brachas are really have a different function, so then you can understand why people won't make that mistake. Okay. Going right back to what Yonatan said at the beginning. Because why would you add an extra step? If you start dealing with opening and closing and opening, why would you do that? That's adding, I won't go as far as called a hefsek, but it's adding an unnecessary step to the process. And we're looking for a certain, I'd say, there's a certain beauty in halakhic efficiency. Why we add that step? We don't want to add steps. We want it to be a precise halakhic process. What? But no, but Rav Yehuda would say Rav Yehuda would say based on a star there's no chashash.
Yeah, but it's like, that's not how it works.
Why not? You're confusing something, which is okay. You're confusing practical chashash with what I would call conceptual chashash. You see, he's saying people, of course, can be confused, right? People can be confused by anything. I could do any action. Marasayan takes up this issue. Like, for instance, by Marasayan, right? Is it theoretically possible that if I see Yehonatan bend down to pick up, that's the case in the Gemara, but let's say, whatever. I could construe any action you do in a way that's suspicious. I could, right? But halacha doesn't say that. It has to tie to an actual halacha. Like walking down the street, I could construe a million suspicious things that you're up to, right? So what I'm saying here is that he's not worried about a practical chashash. He acknowledges that people make mistakes. He's saying that, but halacha, in order to take the chashash seriously, it has to emerge halachically from it. There has to be a halachic basis for the chashash. And here, there's no halachic basis for the chashash because at the end of the day, it's not that kind of part of the process. It's a different idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Toso senses your problem. But we'll get to Tosos in a second. Yeah. If you look, notice in the halacha, well, before I get to Tosfos, okay? I'm not already halacha on my siyah, but if you look at number two, the Rambam says, in Tefillah, Yud Beis, halacha, hey, he says, Kol echav echav min hakoren, poseach sefer Torah, umabit lamakum shukarbo, v'achrach omer baruch et shamarach. So obviously we paskin what? We paskin that when you get your aliyah, you go up, right? You open up the sefer Torah, okay? You look at the place, right? And then you make the bracha, okay? Then you make the bracha. Right, that by the way, that's the halacha. That's it. That's halacha. All the way to the Shulchan Aruch, you'll never see anything about anything other than you get called up on Leah. Well, not even that. You don't. By even getting called up is not brought down. But let's put that to the side. What do? You go up to the Sefer Torah. You open it. You look at the makom and you start. You say the bracha and you start reading. That's it. That's the halacha. Okay, that is all you need to know halachically. Hold on. Look at this Yerushalmi though. The Yerushalmi adds one more dimension, which the Rav Soloveitchik picked up on. Yerushalmi says that Rav Zeira Dala Halacha Kami Shahu Omer Poseach Vera Mavarech, right? Umay Taima Ukipascho Amdukola Umaksiv Basre Vaivarech Ezra Es Hashem Elokim Hagadol. So basically, what you see from there is that, and the Rav was very machmir about this. Okay, notice the Gemara says Poseach Veroa, okay, Poseach Veroa, right? Meaning what? If we're going to go down this road of saying that the bracha is really part of the Maisa Kriya, the fact that the Gemara and the Yerushalmi emphasizes this, the fact that it separates Poseach, that when the Sefer Torah was opened, the people would all stand up and give a blessing. So what does that show you about Poseach? There's when does the actual Haskalah, the beginning of Kriya Torah, start? What? When you open it. Not, there's not even the bracha, right? And that's why the Rav was very machmer that when you get called up for an aliyah, right, you should open it, not the Baal Kareh. Okay, because part of the beginning of you making the bracha is opening it up. And that's a nice diuk in the Gemara. That to me is a very justifiable practice. That when you, now just be careful, you should know that's tricky. What?
Corona.
Okay, but it's a kiyum. That's true. I wasn't thinking about corona. That's an excellent point. But no, it's tricky because often what will happen is that the Baal Kareh normally do open it up for you. And then you got to be careful because it's good to, for you to open it, but then to close it again and open it again is like a big, you know, a little bit of a tircha. I know when I lane, I do my best to, I always leave the Sefer Torah closed until the guy getting aliyah looks at me kind of strange. And when he looks at me strange, then I open it for him. My hope is that he'll just open up himself, but that doesn't always happen. In fact, yes, you could even argue, yes, before Tosfos, Ashkenazim, you could even argue at this point that closing it would be problematic. It'd be problematic. Now, and by the way, I like what Yehonadan's saying. Not just practically, because practically speaking, what you're doing now is that you don't know where the makom is anymore. But halakhically, you could argue it's a hefsek. Because you started the brachos by opening up the Sefer Torah. You started the action of reading. So closing it is saying what? It's over. Now, one second. But obviously, you realize you don't need to. That's why you don't need the Gemara to tell you this. Obviously, you realize that what do you do at the end of the aliyah? What must you do?
Close it.
Because what does closing it signify? The Torah, the thing's over. That's something that I'm very machmir on. When I'm a Baal Kareh, I make sure that if the guy getting aliyah doesn't do it, I always close the Sefer Torah. No one disagrees with that. Everyone agrees that closing it demonstrates that the aliyah is over. All right? Or I should say, the Maisa Kriya is coming to an end. But Tosfos sensed, I think, Yehonatan's issue. Now, my sense is that Tosfos recognized that what were people doing in his time? They weren't going like Rabbi Yehuda. Like, what were people doing when they got an aliyah? It must be. I'm not saying Tosfos doesn't have a svar. I'm just saying this is a classic example of, well, over time, what were people doing? A lot of people were not keeping the Sefer Torah open when they made the bracha. Okay? I mean, there's countless Tosfos in that do this. So Tosfos therefore says, Ulechat chilo hu golo v'sosmo, konam sheivara. Kadesh lo yomro hamon, sheh brachos k'tuv v'spel. Val b'dieved, ein lachos. Shari lo shchichi amei aretz kol kach ata. Right, avala achar shakarabo vaday tzarach legolo koldim shivarak Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so what is Tosos doing here? Tosos is very clever. He's saying, don't learn the machlokas as A or B. Learn it as that A is the ideal. But if you didn't do A, you're still yotzei by B. Meaning, what should you do ideally? You should close the Sefer Torah, because what does that do?
Ideally, close it.
Yeah. Right, who go love a sosma kodem sheivara kadesh lo yomer hamon shabrachas kuvas bavav b'diavad ein lachush. The ideal thing to do is really to close it, right? But if what do you call it? Because this way you cover all your bases. If you like that kind of approach. But ultimately, at the end of the day, if you didn't do that, you're still yotzei. So how do we define Tosfos? Okay, and to be clear, we do not paskin like Tosfos, but yeah. I don't doubt for a second, and I'm someone who loves Tosfos, I don't doubt for a second that this is a very difficult Tosfos. Tosfos is very challenging here because, and again, I do maintain historically he's doing this because people in his time were not holding like Rabbi Yehuda. But whatever, but the point is there's still some sort of sorrow here. And it's weird because he's getting rid of it as being a clear machlokas and rather saying that Rameir holds, you must close it, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying, ideally you can, but you're still yotzi if you didn't do it. Right? So what's the point of contention between Tosfos and everyone else? Because no one else holds like this. Everyone else holds. It's that Rabbi Yehuda would say, almost to the point of what you were saying, Yonatan, that it'd be a hefsek. Right? So what would you say there? How would you answer the machlokas according to Tosfos versus everyone else? That point, I think, is critical. In other words, there's no way Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that if I close the Sefer Torah, it's not a hefsek. Why not? How must Rabbi Yehuda view that in this version, Tosfos' version? How does Rabbi Yehuda view the idea of opening the Sefer Torah? So again, just to review, so we know that according to the simple way, the way 99% of posts can learn, so ultimately, the halacha is that you're supposed to have the Sefer Torah open when you make the bracha, right? And then Tosfos comes along, and it's pretty clear, in my opinion, that Tosfos was really justifying a practice that happened in his day where people were not following that halacha. So he reconstitutes the machlokas as one of lechatchila b'di'evet, That's his own version of it, okay? So I it's hard to answer how he's justified in doing that per se. I would just like to understand, in order to do that, he asked, like, what did he have to, what svara does he have to use in order to say that's the case? Meaning, how do we understand Rav Yehuda's position to be that ideally a person should have the Torah closed, but if he kept it open, it's not a problem? How do we understand that position? That's what I want to clarify. And then we'll move into how this stuff evolves. So what would you say? Think about it. What did we say before about, yeah, Tosfos, I think, is that rather than say that opening up the Sefer Torah is actually the beginning of Kriyas HaTorah, i.e. the Brachos, say instead that, no, it doesn't have a halachic significance, rather it's a practical thing. Meaning, you can't make the Bracha until you do what?
See where
it is, right? But what's the difference? Meaning that, in other words, you can't say it's a hefsek, right, in the Maisa Kriya, if technically the Kriyas HaTorah hasn't begun yet. So if the guy opens it up, sees where it's located, and then closes it, he's done the practical necessity of identifying where he's supposed to make the Bracha on, but the Kriyas HaTorah hasn't begun yet. It only begins with him saying Birchas HaTorah. So the Machlokas would be one of, how do we look at the role of opening it up? Is the opening up actually the halachic beginning of Kriyas HaTorah, or does it simply serve a practical function? And the Kriyas HaTorah doesn't begin until he makes the Bracha. So that's why he would say, what do you solve by saying this? You could retain the Chashash issue, but say at the end of the day, it's not Makif. It's not until you see the Achronim that the Tirchot HaTzibura issue comes into play. Look at number 7. Look at the Mishnah Berurah. All right? So he explains, basically, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, and basically everyone Paskins, except for this one Tosfos, everyone Paskins that when you get the Aliyah, you open the Sefer Torah, you keep it open for the Bracha. Okay? But look at number 7, the Mishnah Berurah. He says, V'dafka b'bracha rishona, lo chashashula, okay, sorry, he says, She'ain sarach liglo Sefer Torah b'shas b'chaso. You don't have to close the Sefer Torah when you make the bracha. The lekel amecha shemin yomu brachos ksuvas b'torah v'umavarach mina sefer. That kol yodin shein brachos ksuvas b'sefer Torah. So he's quoting Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that I don't have to keep the Sefer Torah closed because no one thinks the bracha is in the Torah. Is if a davka b'bracha rishona lo chashul azeh mishum tircha de tzibura sheitzdarchu lahamtin achi yachshiv yiftach. Okay, that's what Yonatan was saying. There's the Mishnah Berurah is the one who says some achronim a little before him say that, but basically says that since we say today, since we pass on like Rabbi Yehuda, so maybe you can argue that if you close the Sefer Torah when you make the bracha and then open it up again, what's gonna occur? You have to refine the spot, and that is Tircha Desibura. That's a Tircha Desibura. Remember, the Gemara and the Rishonim don't say that, but that's saying even if you want to hold like Tosos, it's still better to keep the Sefer Torah open when you make the bracha. Okay, yeah. Here's where things get, in my opinion, gets very interesting. If you want to see how Hilacha evolves now, all right? At this point in time, what would you say? Again, we paskin, you open up the Sefer Torah and you make the bracha. Now, when you make that bracha, when the Sefer Torah opens in front of you, okay? Remember, you never heard of this before. This is the first time going to the sugya, okay? What should you be doing when you make the bracha? Does it matter what you're doing? Do you have to close your eyes or look somewhere else? At this point, you would say no, right? But it's interesting. So Levush, number 8, he says, Uvishash and Mevarach bracha rishona yafof panava echa min atzadim. Now you get the first crack, which is that what should a person do? A person, when he makes the bracha, when the Sefer Torah is open, he should look away. Look in one direction, okay? What would that... Now think about this for a second. Let's think carefully. What would that accomplish?
Absolutely not.
What? Okay. Right, so here's the... Okay, so it's so tempting to say that, isn't it? Stink like an acorn. So tempting to say that. Because you know why you'd say that? You would say that because you'd say, okay, well, in a second, if you want to ensure there's no chashash at all, so look away when you make the bracha. But for a more analytical thinker, you'd be or certainly philosopher, you'd be bothered by that. Why would you be bothered by what the Levush is saying? It should bother you. Excellent point. One thing is that we don't. What's the necessity of trying to fuse the two sides together when we see we paskin one way? That's one point. What else can you say, Sean? Excellent point. One of the Achronim brings that down. They say, how could you look away when you're making a bracha on the Torah? Because what does that indicate about you should when you make a bracha on the Torah, you should express kavod Torah. Looking away from the Torah when you make the bracha is almost like a bizayon. It's like denigrating. Like I can't look at this while I make the bracha. What kind of thing is that, right? But what else can you say? Yes, Ezra. That to me, that's one of the most powerful questions you can ask. You see, that's the thing you should think to yourself. Why would it take until the Levush comes along to offer this possibility? Why didn't Rav Meir say, I can easily solve the problem, open the Sefer Torah and look away? I mean, we're talking about Rav Meir here. I'm not in a deification way. I'm just saying, like, it's not exactly, I mean, with all due respect to Levush, it's not exactly rocket science and saying, like, you want to solve the problem, the Chashash, guy gets the Aliyah, go like that. No one ever say that. And yet for some reason, you're talking about centuries go by until the LaBush comes along and introduces this possibility. You guys are getting an inkling now of this is a great example of we have a nice svara, a nice halachic position, and how things get a little weird. Like, why did Rameir think of this? It's not like the biggest chiddush in the world. Why should we try to compromise and fuse two shitas together? And once we say there's no chashash to worry about, stick to your guns. Keep the Sefer Torah open and make the Aliyah normal. You don't need to worry about Rav Meir's position anymore, right? The Gemara says, halachic Rabbi Yehuda. That's how we paskin. So what do you gain by doing that? What do you gain? In fact, if anything, as Sean mentioned, you might even be incurring a loss because you're demonstrating something that's very, you can argue, not very covetic for Torah. Yeah. So number 9, now of course, as halacha 2.0 tends to do, okay? Meaning as this stuff continues to evolve, so the Ramah steps in and says, well, we got to pick a direction. In other words, it can't just be that you turn any way you want to. Levush says, it doesn't matter, just turn away from the Torah. But the Ramah wants to give it some type of a halachic structure. So which direction do you turn to according to the Ramah? Small. Okay? In source number 9. Nearly the Afuch Panav Letzad Smolo. Now, why do you think you would turn to the left? Maybe. What else could you say? There is a precedent for going to the left first.
When you do
Shemone Esrei. Osa Shalom. Now, why do you face the left first? Well, because God is, so to speak, on the right. So the idea of small represents that idea also, that if the Shechina, so to speak, is in front of the Torah, you face the left because that's where God is located. Okay? But if you notice in number 10, the Chai Adam, he comes back and says, he says, Kodom Abracha, Chai Adam is a very recent posek. Kodom Abracha, Posek, Vroa, Beizamakam Yikra. You make the Bracha with the Sefer Torah open. He says, Yatzim Einav, Ava Lo Yafloch Panav Letzad Acher. So he says, don't, like what Sean was saying, don't turn away from the Torah. Close your eyes. Close your eyes. And then Sean was mechaving to what the Taz says in number 11. The Taz says it openly. If you look at the second line, he says, "Eino nachon demar atzmo kilu eino mevarach hamasha yikra." Right. So if he turns away, it's like he's not making the bracha on that which he's supposed to make the bracha on, which is on the Torah. Right. He's turning away from it. What kind of thing is that? Okay. So that's one interesting thing. One interesting thing is that, and it's interesting that the Rav Paskin also, the Rav held like the Ramah, that you should face the left when you make the Aliyah. But it's a funny thing, I never understood why. I mean, when you go to the Sugya, it's weird. Like, it doesn't really, to me, in my humble opinion, it doesn't really make sense to say that a person should look away. I do it, but I'm just saying, it never made sense to me after going through this, because it seems like, stick to your guns, the Rambam doesn't mention this, right? The Gaon doesn't mention it, the Rishon doesn't mention it. Have the Sefer Torah open and just make the brachos. You pass out Rabbi Yehuda. I think you can appreciate this idea of where the idea of looking away comes from, okay? Now, you have another issue, though. This is actually also can be problematic. Some people have the custom of when they get the Aliyah of bowing. You ever seen that before?
Oh, yeah.
Number 12. So he says, Hakorim bebirchas haTorah toim heim, right? So anyone who bows when they get an Aliyah is making a mistake. Why? Because we know, and this is always the famous question by Aleinu, okay? You have always that funny problem. In Aleinu, we say, V'anachnu koru mishtachavim. And what do people commonly do? But why is that a problem?
It's not a real bow.
That's one problem. What else is the problem? The problem is that, no. The problem is that the chachamim are misakin and you only bow down in which situation? Shemone Esrei. Only by the brachos in Shemone Esrei. The four times, right? Which is Magen Avraham. The first bracha, and then Magen Avraham, and then Modim, and Atos Shimcha. And you're not supposed to bow in any other situation. So the problem is, if a person bows when they get the Aliyah, so what's the problem there? The problem is that they're violating the idea of, what do you call it, of bowing in a place where Chazal say you're not supposed to bow. So that's a problem. However, how would you counter that? How would you counter that?
I could be wrong, but I would assume that
we do have a precedent in halacha for bowing when it comes to the Torah. When do we bow for the Torah?
Okay, fine. Then I've been doing
Hagba, right? So bowing a slight bow is definitely what does a slight bow indicate? It's cover the Torah. So some would argue that if a guy bows down, again, he shouldn't bow down all the way. But if a guy kind of leaned forward when he's getting the Aliyah, so maybe you can squash that under the category of cover the Torah. Maybe. But you see that, by the way, the Magen Avraham and the El Yarab and many others criticize those who bow down when they get the Aliyah. Okay, all right. Then you have the other halacha, which Aruch Shulchan brings down, is that some people have this minhag of kind of picking the Torah up and putting it down when they get the Aliyah. Okay, so Lahorosh Zuhi Torah Seinu. All right, you pick it up to show this is our Torah. Okay, I mean, is that a problem? Nah, I don't see it as being a problem. Right, it doesn't seem like it be a problem. But I didn't bring this in here because only I don't want to give you guys too many sources. But the one minhag that is very heavily criticized, is the kissing of the, is using your talis, right, to kiss the, to rub over the letters. Because there's a shul I daven in Kew Garden Hills, little shtiebel, okay? And there's a sign over the bima that says in Hebrew, like, please, or I don't know if it's Yiddish, please do not use your talis strings, right, to over the letters. Because what are they concerned about? It's happened. It's happened before. So there's like, you have to be careful about that. So that there's actually no early sources whatsoever for any kissing or talis or anything like that when it comes to getting an aliyah. That's actually a much later custom. Yeah. The point I'm trying to get out is like this. The point I'm trying to get, yeah, okay. I'm not sure how that's covered at Torah, but the point I'm trying to get out is that why is taking your tzitzis and putting them over the, touching the sefer covered at Torah? What's the upshot here? Which I find good. Very good. Okay. So Shmuel's trying to say, I know what Shmuel's trying to say, and that's also why the practice of during mincha often is taking the gartel and kissing the makom. What Shmuel's trying to say is that you want to ensure, he is right. You need to be absolutely certain, right, that you see the place that laning starts. That actually has significant halakha consequences. If you're not shown the makom or the wrong makom, you run into some serious questions about a bracha levatala. So you, yes, but it's not. You don't want to run into that problem. You enter something like not everyone. I'll say, but not everyone passes that way. You don't want to go into that road. So Shmuel is right. You could argue that it reinforces it, but in truth, right? You're right. But you know what I say? Like the Baal Korei is a yad or a finger, and you say Vayomer, right? And you just point to the spot. And if you see the letter, the word, you should be able to make the bracha. You know. But that's the upshot I was trying to get to. Like, to me, it's always fascinating to see what I look at as like, and I always get in trouble for this, but like halacha in its what I call pristine form, right? In other words, you see even the Gemara, it was set up as a very specific thing. And we have a svar to back it up, right? And then you see over time, it's very fascinating how certain practices, and I'm not sure if Rabbanim, that's always a question when it comes to these types of situations. Is it that the Achron said to do it and people did it? More often than not, is that people started doing it and now they do what I call, sorry for the negative connotation, shoehorn a rationale for it. Like for example, I could see like certainly from Tosos' time, but I could see like people started looking away, and now we got to justify the practice, right? But ultimately, I think it's important to appreciate how like you can take what I call the halacha in its purest form, and then see how these things evolve over time. So if you are someone who does some of these extra practices, which is fine, right? And to me the one thing I would ask is remember the core idea. The core idea is that Poseach, right? And let's say we paskin, Poseach is the haskalah of the Kriya, right? Keep the Sefer Torah open for the first bracha. That to me is the ikkar. Everything else you want to do, lifting, bow, whatever, that's all ancillary. Make sure that Sefer Torah is open when you make the bracha. Finally, just to add the last point, which is not directly related to this, but it's kind of, so you really should get into the habit of laning with the Baal Korei, okay? It's a problem not to do that. Now, it gets a little tricky because most of you guys don't really know the laning, right? So it gets kind of weird because if you try to keep up with them, you know, you don't really know. You kind of like make it up as you go along kind of thing. I've seen that before. Ideally, in an ideal world, what would happen is that you would know ahead of time, like for instance, on Monday, you know, Klar, you're getting Yisrael, who's a Levi? Zif getting Levi and Basala getting Cohen, right? Or sorry, I went the wrong order, right? And then what Basala would do is, either Bitzalel would lane, or Bitzalel would look over the laning so that when the Baal Korei lanes, he has some familiarity with it. It really is the right way to do it. You really should know ahead of time that that's the case, because this way, when you're up there, you're actually reading with it. Remember, there really should never be such a thing as a Baal Korei today. It's simply to replace the fact that most Jews are ignorant when it comes to laning. If you guys actually knew how to lane, you wouldn't have this problem. But it's just something I really think is a very important thing.